1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's Your Turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Good afternoon. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom, and I'll be with you for this version of Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. It's going to be a wild ride for the next 2 hours. Typically, I have guests broken down in four half-hour segments. Today being Wild Election Day, we're going to break it up even a little bit more than that. We've got Dave Merzen coming on for a couple minutes to talk with us. We've got Speaker of the House Alan Bentz joining us. And then we've got our regular list of guests, litany of guests in line. So we are going to shorten some of the interviews so that we make sure we get in some of these election discussions that need to be had this day of the elections. If you haven't voted, the polls are still open. It's your civic duty to get out there and do that. You get a nice little sticker that says, I voted, and you can wear it with pride. All right, I'd like to introduce my first guest, Nathan Tabor. He is the founder and CEO of TCVmedia.com and the conservativevoice.com, and he is the author of a brand new book out this month, just last month. He can correct me on that. I think it came out maybe about November 1st, and it is called The Beast on the East River, the UN Threat to America's Sovereignty and Security. Nathan, how long ago did the book come out?
It came out October the 31st.
So I was just about right. Okay. Yeah. Well, in this new book, we've talked a lot about the UN on this program. People know that that's one of my pet peeves, and I take every opportunity that I possibly can to poke a sharp stick in the eye of the UN. And so this is a good topic for us to talk about. And what Nathan's new book talks about is he accurately describes many of the problems at the United Nations, and he offers us some challenges that there are a lot of things that we need to be made more aware of and that seem to be going ignored in the United States. And Nathan, if I can, I want to start out by just sharing with the listeners a little bit, two paragraphs that you have at the very beginning of your book, because it really is a sad scenario. So please oblige me and let me read these two paragraphs because I think it sets the tone for the whole book. He writes, the long war had left the countryside in ruins. The men and boys had been gone from the village for months or years, and only the women and small children remained. They scraped by as best they could, scavenging whatever meager scraps of food they could find, trying to fend off starvation for one more day. Many were sick and dying. Then the foreign soldiers came. Many of them were drunk and cruel. The soldiers terrorized the people and plundered the village. They brutally raped the women, even the young girls, whenever they chose. Those who resisted were beaten or killed. If they screamed for mercy, it was in vain, for there was no one to hear or to help. Well, you go on to explain that in a perverted, ironic sort of way, this situation does happen very often. And then you describe that the dissolute soldiers who are committing these brutal crimes against women and children are the very ones who have been charged with their safety and protection. Can you tell the listeners what I'm talking about?
You know, it is absolutely incredible, and that's how the book starts out. You know, there was the French commander in Congo who, as they busted into his office, into his living quarters, was raping a 12-year-old girl, videotaping it. And then they found in his closet there was several hundred tapes of various multiple girls that he had raped and molested and was selling it on the streets of Congo.
What did you say his capacity was with the United Nations?
He was a French soldier.
Okay.
But he was in command of, there was roughly about 10,000, quote-unquote, peacekeepers in blue helmets in Congo at the time.
So he was there at the behest of the United Nations?
Yeah, he was there under the United Nations seal. UN uniform, UN patch on his shoulder, and was raping and molesting young girls and videotaping it and then selling it. And by the time when they went in, by the time they got the paperwork put together and the prosecution ready to go, he was on the plane back in France and to this day still has not been prosecuted.
Oh, is there any justice? It really makes your heart, it makes my stomach sick. It really does. One of the things that I learned through reading your book, The Beast on the East River, that you lay out, it's sort of a different twist to what a lot of people have talked about when they talk about the UN, the demise of the UN. Most folks say, you know, well, the UN isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing, and they criticize it for not comporting or rising up to the level of what it is that was expected when the UN was formed so many years ago. But you actually, I think, take an interesting position, because it seems that you say that they are, in fact, doing almost precisely what they were created to do. Is that a fair statement?
Well, when they were created in 1945, they were to protect the sovereignty of all nations, especially the U.S. But beginning in the 60s, the new plans that Kennedy put in place and that other presidents have put into place in the rewriting of UNESCO and things like that, they are doing exactly what they've set forth today.
Well, can you give us some examples of the precedent then that has been put in place to show the lengths that these UN bureaucrats will go in order to secure greater power, which is, you know, as you point out, you know, gathering the power for themselves is really part of their mantra.
Yeah, there's three things in this book that I say that needs to exist for the quote-unquote new world order or the United Nations to be in control: taxing authority, court systems, and standing military. The standing military would probably be one of the most interesting, because you look at the presidential directives 13 and 25 from Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton. He put into place loopholes into the Constitution to allow more U.S. military personnel to be under the control of the United Nations. This was initially put into place by Kennedy in the early 60s, but has never been taken off the books. People are like, no, there's no, you know, our soldiers are always underneath the control of the U.S. That's not true. Ask Michael New from 1996. Remember the soldier who wouldn't sew the U.N. patch on his U.S.-issued military uniform?
Mm-hmm.
He was court-martialed and dishonorably discharged. Well, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution says that the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, is the only one that is to have to be over our Army and our Navy.
That's interesting.
But even George W. Bush today, when you look at the numbers, we are cutting the amount of U.S. nuclear weapons that we have in the U.S. and turning more control and more control of other nations over to the United Nations.
Yes, let me ask you, you mentioned Bill Clinton, and I know that several months ago, maybe even for the last year, there was some talk, his name was being bantered about, former President Clinton's name, as someone who could likely succeed Kofi Annan as the Secretary General. We know now that that didn't go that way. But do you think it would have helped or hurt the U.S. when it comes to the U.N. for someone like Clinton to have been selected as Secretary General?
I think it would pretty much be right in the same vein, because when you look at Bill Clinton's ideology, it's pretty much the same of Kofi Annan or others. You know, they're pushing for this, you know, environmental control, for global control, for taxing authority. So I don't think it would have affected currently the position we're on. I mean, the United States currently funds about 20% of the United Nations budget. Yet they vote against us the nations vote against us 80% of the time.
That's right.
If you had an employee that voted against you 80% of the time, would they be your employee for very long?
Would you continue to fund them? I doubt it.
Right. I mean, would you continue to pay their salary if they were working against you all the time?
That's right.
So I think Bill Clinton probably would have gone right along with this, had to continue to exert the authority, the sovereignty of the U.S.
In the book, The Beast on the East River, you have one chapter. This is something, and I've read a lot of books about the United Nations, and I have to say that there were two things in particular that I want to address, each of them separately, that I had never really learned before until I looked at and read your book. Could you share with the listeners some of your thoughts about how the United Nations is infiltrating our school systems? You've got an entire chapter in here devoted to the global education agenda.
Yeah, and that's the first chapter that I deal with in the book outside of the introduction. And the reason why is I believe, you know, currently today, if they tried to take our guns, I think we are fighting that. The NRA gun owners and voters are fighting that. But if we educate our children that the Second Amendment means that a standing military is the only one to have guns, which we're currently teaching in our schools, that the United Nations job becomes, you know, a much easier in 20, 30, or 40 years.
Sure.
Ronald Reagan got us out of UNESCO, the Global Education Agenda. George W. Bush got us back into it. Now, in this, you know, the first four or five pieces of this Global Education Agenda, I don't necessarily disagree with. Eradicating world hunger, eradicating poverty, stopping AIDS and HIV. I agree with stuff like that. I don't think we should be funding it all, but it's like that is a good humanitarian thing. But the last point about that is this global development, being part of the global community. And in that, they're going in and they're re-educating our children from critical thought to correct thought. So if someone in authority tells you that 2 plus 2 is not always 4, you are to trust them and go along with what they're saying.
Hmm.
So where that becomes influential is in 20 years when that 7-year-old is now 27 in a position to make a difference in voting, or even 18, 11 years later. If you have positioned and made them think, hey, don't think for yourself, just go along with this.
Right.
You're putting yourself, you're setting a domino effect for everything else that comes in this book for global, for the quote unquote New World Order.
All right, well, let me, we've only got about a minute left or so before I've got to take a break, and I do want to make sure to touch on another issue, because, again, I think it's somewhat unique to your book, The Beast on the East River, and there's a lot of very interesting points that you raise in this book that have not been raised in the other books that I've read on this subject, and that is that the UN controls some of America's landmarks. Tell me about that.
Yeah, they're World Heritage Sites, and you know, please go to, hopefully buy the book, but go to Google or Yahoo and search these things. I'm not sitting here with a tinfoil hat on my head. The World Heritage Sites came about of a treaty of 1972, it was ratified by the United States, it's been ratified numerous times. It's the Yellowstone Park, Grand Canyon, Great Smoky Mountain, Statue of Liberty, Independence Hall. These are sites that have been set aside as World Heritage Sites, and the United Nations currently controls them.
Hmm.
And when we get back from break and I hear the music starting to play, I want to go through and show the significance of where this is detailed on what website and what it means to the sovereignty of the U.S.
Okay. I will have to ask you, if it's okay, I'd like you to come back and join us another time to talk about those issues. We did have a little bit of an interruption in our regular program. They've asked me to do some election coverage since it is voting day.
And can I give you this one quote then?
Okay, please do.
Wrap up. This is on World Heritage Site. It says, World Heritage Sites belong to all the peoples of the world, irrespective of the territory on which they are located. And in the Habitat One conference report, it says that private ownership of land is a social injustice.
Okay, well, that's great information. We've been talking with Nathan Tabor. He's the author of the book, The Beast on the East River, The UN Threat to America's Sovereignty and Security. Go pick it up. It's frightening, but it's information we need to know, and we need to make sure our children know. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. God bless.